We start our Tuesdays with Nathan Buckley. Hello, Bucks.
Can you hear me, Bucks? How are
you? Can you hear me, Bucks? Very good. We're on Zoom. You've done yourself a bit of a mischief.
I've done myself a mischief in the gym last night. I don't know exactly the extent, but it's not good.
What do you fear it is?
Well, I was doing bench and something let go, and it might have been a pec. muscle. So I'll see a specialist later today and find out whether there's any surgical fixing that needs to be done.
When you do injuries, you do them properly, Bucks.
Yeah, 50 isn't all it cracked up to be, Jared. I don't think the listeners need to worry themselves with my physical circumstances.
Righto. How can you put yourself in Ben Rutten's shoes today?
Oh, it's pretty hard to. It really is. It's an untenable situation. We understand that. But I mean, to unpack it is to go above and beyond his role and responsibility as a football coach. I think the process is messy, and I don't think it's been honourable of the senior coaching position and of Ben as a person and a contributor to that football club. And there's an accountability with that for everyone on the board or in management positions above him.
Is there a necessity that if you launch a bid for Alistair Clarkson, that straight out undermines your incumbent senior coach? You have to recognise that.
Well, we're assuming that's what it's about, aren't we? I wonder, like, as a clear thinking individual, would this be occurring in the same shape and form if Alistair Clarkson wasn't the spectre of Alistair Clarkson wasn't on the horizon? So I would guess that the answer is no, it would not be happening this way if it wasn't for Alistair Clarkson and an impending decision with North Melbourne. So it's a vote of no confidence in the coach or the current regime from pretty much the board all the way down. And the focus goes on to the senior coach, but because there's a person there who is seen as a person who will come and fix all our ills, and that may or may not occur if they're able to land an Alistair Clarkson. But there is a process and a program that will fix Essendon's past. It's just a matter of how quickly they want it and whether they want to plonk on an individual to do that.
Is that a messiah complex?
That's exactly what it is. That's not to say that it's right or wrong, but we have seen it fail before and we have seen it work before. So there's no guarantees on any of this. But if you have tried a couple of times a few different ways, and I think Essendon have been a broken club for the most part of the last decade. I think, and I think through, some would say it's all on them. Some would say through no fault of their own. But it's somewhere in between. They've been a club that has, a lot of people have carried a lot of weight, a lot of emotional baggage. And it's hard to perform when that is in your environment. When your environment's heavy, and you might have, occasions of light and shade. But the reality is that Essendon has been a heavy environment for 10 years. It's been a place that a lot of people have left unhappy and have been unable to reconcile their experiences there. And in many ways, it might have been a poison chalice for both John Worsfold and Ben Rutten, amongst all of the other coaches and administrators that have found themselves there, unable to bridge the gap between what has occurred and what their future looks like at this point.
So how do you go about relieving that heavy environment?
Well, as you said in your introduction, change and turmoil turmoil is a necessary part of change, especially if that change is resisted. And there's no doubt that there was elements of the board and the administration of the Essendon Footy Club that were that really wanted to stay the course and wanted to continue on the path that they had set. But there were elements of the board and potentially the administration that weren't, or even as deep as the football program and the playing group, that weren't, that wanted to go about it a different way. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, but even in an operation that's working seamlessly and connected and efficient, still has elements of naysayers in their midst, and the naysayers are actually the ones that challenge the status quo and maybe create friction and growth within a really high functioning environment. So you can't have no friction, but to have too much is pretty difficult to be in and to perform in.
Were you weren't a huge believer in the internal review when it was announced? Is that's my memory? Is that accurate?
Well, I thought that I think fundamentally everyone from and it depends how good the communication is from the CEO to the board, because that's the direct line of and the football manager to the board, and how much the board actually believe in their CEO and their football manager, and the roles that they are responsible for. I don't mind. I think internal reviews happen daily, but when you're looking at a big picture review, you need to really have the faith of the people that are running those reviews, that they're doing it in the best interest of the football club, that they're aligned with the way that the board sees it, or that they're getting information from everywhere in the football department. They're getting to the source of the issues and the opportunities, and that they're communicating that openly and transparently to the decision makers. So internal reviews, as I said, they happen daily. Like, they happen daily, weekly, but bigger picture blueprints. That's probably what Essendon were looking at, and whether that was done effectively or not, only people internally know that.
What's your view of external reviews?
Well, I think external reviews, they have a place. I mean, obviously in 2017 at Collingwood, there was three different external reviews. There was a board review, there was a review of the administration, and there was a review of the football department. All of them were done externally. There was a third party group that was there for the board review, and recommendations came down around the board and the administration. And Pete Murphy and Jeff Walsh ran at that point an external review around our football department. Actually, Walshy came in, from the outside in after 2 or 3 years out, and ran a review as fresh eyes. So there were some postulates that were set out. There were some that were acted on. There were others that weren't. And that is the, I suppose that is the choice of the leadership at the time. And some would have seemed to have been fruitful, and others potentially not. But there's no doubt that there was a quick turnaround in our performance, and there was, whether that was the change, whether that was the urgency, whether it was simply a ripening of and a maturity of what was put in place before, it's probably all of the above.
The clip that was shown on Footy Classified last night, Nathan, with Chaz, Nick Hind alongside Ben Rutten, and the tensions that look like they are at play there. What did you see when you looked at that?
I think it's really dangerous to make definitive suppositions on an isolated piece of vision. And I think that what we like to do when we don't have all the information is try and glean what we can from the information we have. Now, that's not a guarantee that what we're seeing is accurate. That little incident could have been the tip of the iceberg. It could be, Nick Hind could be one of many players that feels the same. He could have been embarrassed about something at the time. There could have been an opportunity for learning and growth. We have no idea why it happened, what it actually meant, or what transpired from it. But everyone assumes that it's evidence that Ben Rutten has lost the players, because that was what the commentary suggested. And we're looking for reasons there's some confirmation bias that happens. And yes, Essendon aren't performing the way that they would wish to. And they started the year poorly. They had a really good block in the middle, and they've had a couple of really poor performances. And I don't know how much the players are aware of. I don't know how much the football program's aware of. But what I do know is when there's muck in the environment, it makes it almost impossible to perform. I've got no idea what Ben Rutten's going to do or can do going into the club today. I just got no idea how you would handle that as the quasi senior coach with quasi leadership in an environment like this. You're probably better giving the players another day off, waiting for the decision makers to give some direction above you, and then picking up the pieces beyond that.
Can you run a review that demands accountability for the performance that you just turned in when you've been so undermined in your authority?
I don't think a review is possibly the way to go. If I was in Ben Rutten's shoes, the only thing, firstly, he would meet with his coaches and he would meet with his staff. And they would have a conversation around, I think you'd have a conversation around how no one's ever in this forever. Nothing's guaranteed. Yeah, we're very fortunate to be a part of an AFL program. We have responsibilities. Well, let's go and execute them to the best of our ability with a smile on our face and enjoying the people that we're involved with right now in some shape or form. Let's break it down, take the win and the loss out of it, and understand that things aren't going to be the same when the dust settles here. So I appreciate you. I appreciate you. I have gratitude for you. You've done this for me. I've felt supported here. And turn it into a situation where you actually have enormous gratitude for the opportunity that you have, and try and put together some good training sessions and a really strong four-quarter performance against Richmond and see if you can... So you can finish this chapter with a really positive result. That is, if they're allowed to, and that's still going to come out in the wash, isn't it?
What if you're a player today, Bucks? How do you? I mean, it would be impossible to have avoided it. There would be all sorts of messages passing, I'm sure, just from man to man, as we all would as mates, being puzzled as to what you were walking into.
Yeah, well, players need direction. People need direction, and they need to be clear on where they fit, where they can add value, and they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. They want to know that their contributions are going to be rewarded, not just for themselves, but their contributions are going to be rewarded by being part of something that is positive, that is going places, and that leaves a mark. You know, we're not on this earth just to be mediocre or the middle. We're here to experience as much as we can experience, and we want to be a part of something that leaves a mark. And the players, if the players don't feel that, if the staff don't feel that valued, that is, and that their best efforts are going to be rewarded, it's self-defeating. And I'm not sure that we're only talking about today or this week. Perhaps the Essendon players and staff have felt that. And perhaps anyone in the Essendon Football Club might have felt that for the best part of the last 10 years. So it is difficult. It's definitive. It is any conversations or thoughts or emotions that are not about how good we can be at footy and how we can come together as an organisation and as a group of people to enjoy one to enjoy our opportunities, but then two to challenge our skills and to challenge ourselves to see how good we can be against our own estimations and then against the opposition. Any thoughts that are away from that are thoughts that are taking away from your best performance. And I dare say that the main topics of conversation at Essendon are not about how good we can be on the footy field at the moment.
Yes. Yep. It would. It's not hard to imagine that. So let me ask you two questions around the Clarkson scenario, Bucks. The first is, can you see him as a logical fit and a prize target for Essendon?
Well, I think he's a logical fit for everyone that wants a coach who has been there, done that, been a part and led a successful program, a premiership program. And he clearly still has the passion and drive, the experience and the expertise. to be able to, I suppose, to actually find those outcomes and to achieve those outcomes. The fact that, I mean, the club have clearly already made a decision on their current coach. My worry for Essendon and the entire club and supporter group is that they've actually done this the wrong way. I mean, you've got to make a decision on your incumbent coach before you go chasing another one. And if that is in fact happening, because I mean, if I'm in Alistair Clarkson's shoes, I'm wondering, well, is this actually been done in a in the right way? He's actually been a coach who, or a person who has spoken about integrity and a right way of doing things. And yeah, he may not like at all the way that the Essendon Footy Club and board have treated Ben Rutten in all of this, or their players and football department underneath them. So it's they're playing a game of chicken, and they are potentially putting all their eggs in one basket. But either way, it will work out. Whether Alistair Clarkson is suitably encouraged and excited by the prospect of Essendon, or whether he isn't, I can't see Ben Rutten continuing. He won't, and there'll be enormous change in the football program, but the playing group will remain intact for the large part, and a new coaching group will come in, whether it's with Alistair at the helm or not. It really is a fresh start, a forced fresh start. It's a control alt delete. It's not a simply an on and an off. So they'll have an opportunity, but yeah, it's not going to be pretty in the short term.
And if there were three jobs lined up in front of you, as there might be for Clarkson, Essendon, North Melbourne, and the Giants, what's your leaning? What's your inclination? Which is the pick of the jobs?
It's a fair question. I mean, there's no expectation at North Melbourne, and that can give you a little bit more time. But at the same time, then your challenge is to build not necessarily an expectation, but a belief within that organisation from the top to bottom, or bottom to top, more to say. GWS, has a very charismatic CEO who is influential in a lot of the key decisions. You need to make sure that relationship was strong and capable. And that obviously the director of footy was, you felt was in really well positioned in that relationship to be able to make the change in decisions and to have the confidence that what you wanted was going to be followed through, or that you could be a part of a collaborative decision making group. And Essendon at the moment is it's a real wait and see. I mean, there are no perfect jobs in for an AFL senior coach. You go in with real opportunities in some and real challenges in other areas, but I wouldn't and I won't put myself in a position of speculating between, other than to say that the same person won't be a perfect fit for all three. Each of the three clubs needs to understand itself and the skill sets that it needs, and then it needs to recruit around that. And that might be an experienced coach, or it might be a first-time coach, but it'll be about the skill set more than the experience, I would suggest.
I'd ask you which one you'd take, except that that would lead to clickbait in a heartbeat, wouldn't it?
Well, I haven't actually sat down to consider that. I haven't. I think you'd have to meet with each of those, the key decision makers, and you'd need to do your own due diligence. And I think it seems like Alistair Clarkson has done that with North and with GWS, in a sense. So the question now is, would he make a knee-jerk decision around Essendon, or would he delay the process with the other two, if we're led to believe that it's North Melbourne, would he delay the process with North Melbourne to explore the Essendon job more thoroughly? He is in a position of authority with this. He's in a position of strength and power, because more than one club want him potentially. So It's a seller's market.
Yes. There's a flurry of Essendon supporters here texting through, Bucks. Are you sure you're done with coaching? You wouldn't come and coach the mortal, well, not quite the mortal enemy. I guess that's Carlton, but the bitter rival.
What I would say to that, Jared, is when you see the way that the club has actually handled this last little part, you know, and I actually know Dave Barron through our Channel 10 days, you know, way back when. I think he's a great fella. But I've never dealt with him professionally. I don't know how he – oh, well, outside of that. And, yeah, he's been a boss and I've been to doing some work for him sort of around the traps or as a talent, I suppose. But, I'd be casting aspersions. But right now, I don't know. You'd need to sit down with us and to understand exactly where they're at as a football club. I think when you're an incumbent and your club goes through turmoil and trouble, you still got a fair handle on the opportunities and the strengths that you carry. And if we can just get over this and we just get over that and just do this right or tweak that, we know that we can find this sweet spot to give our and to create the environment that is great to grow within. But when you're coming in cold, there's just so much that you will not know, and eventually you need to make a decision, make a leap of faith. But no, I'm not there, mate.
No, I was going to say that wasn't a no, and then you got the no in at the end. So good stuff, Nathan Buckley with me on this Tuesday. A couple of others I'll run past you shortly. The potentially untimely hamstring injury to Jeremy Cameron, and tonight's tribunal with Zane Cordy. Sam Edmund's going to keep us up to speed in all that's happening at Essendon around the footy world, and we'll take some calls shortly as well. Nathan Buckley gets us underway on a Tuesday. Sam Edmund's going to come in and join me shortly. It's Patrick Dangerfield's 300th game this weekend, so we'll have a long-form chat with Pat about the life and times across his time in the league, our McCafe menu, and Malcolm Speed, the godfather of sports administration in this country as well, coming into the studio at 11. McCafe, our official coffee partner. Two more for you, Bucks. At the first, Jeremy Cameron, a low-grade hamstring strain when everything seemed to be going so well for the Cats. Is this the scourge when you've got things seemingly humming?
It's inevitable. Nothing ever goes 100% your way. So there are going to be challenges for the ultimate premier in the next 5 or 6 weeks, and Geelong are going to have to find a way to, I don't know. Obviously, they'll be hoping to get him back up. They'll be balancing, you know, the risk reward at different times. You know, whether you try and bring it forward a week or leave it a week. Yeah, they've been very conservative with their injuries this year, and they've managed their players really well. So to have this happen would be enormously disappointing for them and for Jeremy himself. He's had an exceptional year, and he's been a big part of what they are. But it's not ideal, but it's something that that Geelong and other contenders are going to have to deal with over this next little period.
How big a difference would it make to them if he wasn't there for one of their critical finals?
Oh, look, I think you'd have to say that there's a fairly big gap for them. He's been a really crucial part of the way that they go forward, in particular, all the way up the field, all the way back. I think he makes Tom Hawkins a more dangerous prospect. I think he brings some of their small forwards into the game more because he plays a fairly unique hybrid role. I mean, he and Buddy Franklin are probably the two players that play similarly. They get all the way up the field and then they can really stream back hard. So they're quite unique in those aspects of how they play. Geelong have handled changing in personnel better than any team in the comp this year, and that's why they're currently sitting as favourites. So they've got a lot of weapons in all areas of the ground, and I think they can. I think that they can withstand losing a couple. It's just a matter of there is a tipping point, and it depends who you meet and at what time, and whether the players at your disposal are going to get the job done. But you'd prefer to have Jeremy Cameron than not.
And Zane Cordy is booked to front the tribunal tonight, Bucks, for the incident that left Tanner Bruin with concussion. It was sent ungraded, which I'm completely miffed by. As I understand it now, the charge tonight will be rough conduct and it will be it will be steeped in being unreasonable in the circumstances. So it will have to have a grading, otherwise you can't prosecute a case. So I think the grading will be careless. It will obviously be high impact because of the concussion, but it will be to the body. So the charge on the bump is going to be body contact, which is everything about this strikes me as weird.
Mm. So due process hasn't been followed or has been followed?
So I think there's a clause that allows this to happen, but I do think, you know, in our football sense, this is unconstitutional. You've reversed the burden of proof on a player, I think, notwithstanding that by the time they get there tonight, there's going to be a charge applied to it.
So we're now just removing the illusion of an independent body between the AFL and tribunal decisions?
So the AFL has the right to send a case to the tribunal. The only way to read this is Michael Christian said, no, I'm not grading it because it's not a reportable offence. And the higher powers of the AFL said, no, there's a concussion here. We need this to be tested by a jury with all the evidence heard.
So Michael Christian didn't send it. The AFL demanded that it go.
There. I think that's the only way to read it. The only way that it could get there ungraded, I think, is through that circumstance.
So how much of behind this is the AFL's medico-legal responsibilities around concussion a potential economy around that?
Almost entirely. But this is what we were told that this wouldn't happen. So this is where I think it slides, is the actuality of concussion wouldn't be the base of why cases. Mm. It had to be a reportable offence. And this worked through the system and was sent not as a reportable offence.
Yeah, the way I would glean it now is reportable offences are anything that cause harm to an opposition, especially to the head or through concussion. You can actually be concussed without making contact to the head. And this is, Bruin's head hits the ground afterwards, and that may be when the concussion actually occurred, if there is, in fact, has it been a confirmed concussion?
Yes.
Is that the medical report?
Yep. Yes.
So, but it could also have happened simply through body-to-body contact and a whiplash action without any contact of the head to anything else in particular. But, you know, that's we're starting to go into really sort of question mark areas when we're judging on outcome and not on intent. Let's just put flags in our shorts and make it a non-contact game and let's be done with it.
That's provocative at the end. Look after yourself, Bucks. Let's see how this all pans out for you.
Thanks, Jared.
Good on you.
Appreciate that.
Nathan Barkley, under duress this Tuesday morning.